I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, hello, leavers and believers and heathens and pagans and all kind of people. Welcome back to Leaving Hillsong. My name's Tanya and we are continuing with Pride Month celebrations. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the other special episodes, make sure you do that. You can't imagine what a privilege it is to sit and talk with people at these stages in their lives and talk about some of the hardest times that they've been through. And it's just so striking how passionate people are to share and to explain and to really bare their soul as such, to try and prevent other people from being harmed. And also just to get these stories out there as part of our history, as part of what happened to all of us collectively, as well as to individuals. I just am continually humbled and grateful for this incredible honour. Now, about 7 years ago, I was reading some post on Facebook and I ran into Sarah and she made some incredibly sharp, witty point. And we've been Facebook friends ever since. So when this Pride Month came up, I asked her to join us and she's been a part of the Christian Outreach Centres, which are Australian-based, and I'll leave it up to you to listen to the similarities or the differences and the story of an insignificant gay kid.
Let us start. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Tanya.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you? It's late where you are.
Yeah, good. It's still in the afternoon. You are joining us from where exactly? Like, I was thinking, like, Scotland. I always think of Scotland as like one big town place.
I mean, in comparison to Australia, it kind of is, but I'm from Glasgow in Scotland.
Okay. We'll be settling into that beautiful accent.
I'm going to try and keep my accent.
No, it's. There's no issues here. Sorry. Now I feel like kind of racist or something. Weird.
I mean, it's xenophobic if anything, but.
Oh, look. It's a stab at a stab at a stab of irony. I'm lost now. I don't know what's irony and what's.
We're both white, so we can stab at each other. It's fine.
I was just looking at Facebook before, and because for the life of me, I can't remember what comment it was or conversation we were having, but you were just so sharp and on point. And that was 7 years ago. We happened upon each other on Facebook.
I can't even remember how, but there was something probably Hillsong related or something.
And I was like, no, I want to know more about what she says. So here we are again. So start us off, please. How did you wind up in a Pentecostal church? And I know bits and pieces of your story. I don't know. So I'll be learning along the way.
Sure. Like most people, you're either born into it or you're preyed upon when you're in a vulnerable state. So I was born into Christianity, into the Baptist church. And then I think, my parents, especially my mother, really liked the most culty elements of Christianity they could possibly find. After a few different churches, we found ourselves in a very sort of like Hillsong adjacent. Do you remember Christian Outreach Centre? Because they started in Australia. Mm-hmm. So this was a church plant from there. You know, like a young couple sent out to start a church. Anyway, my parents joined that church.
And how old are you at this point?
When we joined that particular church?
Yeah, when you start going evangelical.
I mean, I think when we really became quite evangelical Pentecostal, you know, like Fruits of the Spirit and all that stuff, would have been... I was probably about 10 or 11, you know, like around about the sort of Toronto Blessing time.
Okay. Okay. It's an interesting place to join.
The 90s, want to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of post satanic panic kind of era.
And what was it like? What did you think?
I was terrified of it to begin with, to be honest. I found people falling over in the spirit and speaking in tongues really terrifying.
Yeah.
And the pressure to join in with the group, because I'm quite an introvert really, especially when I was a kid. So to begin with, I partially hated it, but partially recognized how much my mother loved it, and so you know, I wanted to please her. And it was more exciting than sitting at church and just standing up and sitting down and doing hymns. But my initial reaction was I hated it. It was scary, really embarrassing.
Oh yeah, that too. Sorry. What was the translation like when they brought it over to your own country and culture?
I mean, it was very Australianized. Like the pastors, Kevin and Cheryl, mentored by a couple of Ruth and Ashley Schmieder, I think they were called, who are Australian. And it was kind of weird because they both kind of developed an Australian accent, even though they were both English. But it was just like, you know, all the sort of like preaching inflections and, oh, it's wonderful. And just like, they kind of had an Australian accent. It was a very small church because it was just literally them planting a church. But they obviously aspired to be everything that Hillsong is. And when I obviously found out about Hillsong and, you know, Shout to the Lord being the best song in the world or whatever, obviously it was just really paralleled. It was very much, you could just tell that like this was a really similar set up, you know.
How long were you there for?
So I was there,
yeah,
probably, I think we officially joined that church when I was maybe about 13 or 14. Before that, it was all going to like all the charismatic conferences and all that. And I stayed there until I was actually 27.
Okay.
Although from about age 19 to 27, I was, you know, always getting into trouble for either being too introverted or questioning. But I also was in I married an Australian guy, actually, because, well, I wanted to have sex. And the only way you can legally have sex in Christianity is to marry someone. And also the only way you can be considered anyone as a woman is to, you know, be with a man of God or whatever. Yeah. But also it's just like that was the culture, wasn't it? Like I was 19 when I got married, which came back. Ridiculous. And it obviously wasn't a happy situation in the slightest. Also, I was gay, but I really thought that could cover it up. You know, I was like, if I can get married to a man though, no one could guess that I'm a raging homosexual. So
one of the themes of this month, unfortunately. I mean, was he from the church itself?
He was from a different branch of Christian Outreach Centre from Brighton, where they were actually planted from Australia. His family came over to help plant that or something. He came up to do what was called the School of Ministries, which was like a paid for ministry school, which was just a whole load of horse in the end. I mean, as everything was. But also, I mean, you'll probably hear this from other people you interview, that you're raised with such low self-esteem that like the minute somebody shows any interest in you, you're like, oh my God, this, and also you're told like, oh, this must be the one,
Okay, so where does that come from? Where does that idea of the self-esteem come from, do you think? Like,
how is a human meant to have any sense of self-esteem when you're born into a situation where if you do anything wrong, you're going to hell? You're going to be eternally punished for something. And especially, I think, as a woman, I mean, who are you? I mean, you read the Bible, women are just complete chattel, you know? Where are you meant to grasp a sense of self-esteem when you're not allowed to be yourself in any way, shape or form? You literally have to conform to this, like, extroverted, you know, all singing, all dancing, speaking in tongues person. And if you're not that, you're basically cajoled into being that, which is psychological damage. So yeah.
Oh, we don't hear from the introverts for fairly obvious reasons, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, that would be the nightmare environment. I hadn't thought of that.
Especially when you have, when you're not straight or cis, anything other than straight, cis, white person, you don't really have a chance, do you?
Like, it just seems to snowball.
Yeah.
Okay, so then how do you, what happens before 27 to... Yeah,
it's one of the questions that I've always had is how do some people get out of it? And see, for me, it was the second I had access to the internet, I was like, oh, knowledge.
Okay.
You know, I was like, wow, I had access to information, because you know yourself, when you're in church as well, it's deliberate that what you watch and listen to and the people you hang around is controlled highly. You don't want to learn things that are outside of the doctrine. You might have these free thoughts, you know, that like make you, you can believe in science or something like that.
But I mean, and the reason I'm oohing and aahing is so many people, so often the information doesn't do anything for people. So couldn't agree with you more. Like, since the internet, how come people don't see more clearly? We had Bibles with highlighters, and if you wanted to make a point, you had to like remember what page it was on and flick back. So
the thing that led me down the slippery slope to atheism was reading the Bible and also observing all the people around me. I was like, not only is the Bible an absolutely monstrous, violent, misogynistic, homophobic sex, like, it's a horrible book. You know, you can cherry pick what you want out of it, but most people have not even read it. I've read the Bible 2-3 times, and it will make an atheist out of anyone if you're willing to actually look at what's actually written. Also, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm an atheist because there's a humongous lack of evidence for any of this, but I also found myself collating evidence for the church being such a corrupt institution. Like, because I was young and my parents were leaders in the church, because that's, you know, what they always wanted to be. My mother's an artist, another story. So I got to see, I was sometimes sitting in on the meetings, you know, like the pastors talking about how they're gonna, you know, allocate money to their new iPhones, or like, I actually got to see it from the inside of how corrupt it was. And then when things happened with me and my ex-husband, he, well, long story short, as a sex offender, all the advice that we had there, you know, I was told to just lie back and take it kind of thing from him. And the reason that he was a sex offender is because I wasn't him enough. Which is a hard thing when you're a gay woman, but still.
Trapped in that environment.
Yeah, but all of that, like, all together, I was like, how could anyone observe that and not see that it's the perfect environment for abuse, for theft, for just, I've never seen corruption like it. Yeah, I've just never seen corruption like it. So it's not only did I have a massive lack of evidence for a God, I feel like I have a huge swathe of evidence for the church and every single religious institution. Like, there's not one that's not misogynistic. Everyone is just like the perfect environment for abuse, and then covering the abuse, perpetrating the abuse, and replicating it again and again and again. And I don't like it. So I was out.
Over all those years, like, what did it culminate in for you, that what it went along with the marriage breakdown? Is that like, so how did you actually get out
of the marriage? I had an affair with a woman and blew it all up at once.
Wow.
Basically that. And looking back, I don't think I would have got out of it any other way. I didn't know anyone outside the church, and if it wasn't for Well, no, I went to university and I made some friends who were not Christians, and I found that they were much more supportive, just in every single way, and much more moral. And it made me feel like actually I might have people that could support me if I did get out of this. But yeah, it was very much accelerated when I had an affair with a woman and basically was like, homosexuality and Christianity are mutually exclusive. So though I checked out years ago in the church, I was just like not, I think for maybe 6 or 7 years before I left, from about age 20,
mm-hmm.
I'd already checked out. But it's just your lifestyle. You do it. And I was involved in the band. I was involved. I mean, they keep you involved deliberately, you know. Mm. Had I not been in the band and I was sort of low-key running that for them, I wouldn't have had any reason to stay. But you just go along with it. Also, my parents were in it. Also, my husband was into it. Like, yeah. You didn't have a way out. So looking back, I'm like, I think the sort of almost slamming the self-destruct button was probably the only way that I could get out. And if it hadn't been her, it would have been any other woman, because I just needed out and I needed to be gay.
How did they find out, or did you tell them, or what happened?
I told them. Yeah, I basically just told my family. Yeah, I was just like, I'm having an affair with a woman, leaving him. I mean, yeah. That's about it, really.
You don't seem to hear about women being forced into gay conversion therapy as much.
Oh, well, they do.
Oh, really? Is marriage like the gay conversion therapy that proves that?
Oh, dude, yeah, a little bit. Bear in mind that you don't hear from women, because you don't hear from women in general. Like, yeah, men are gay, but like they're still, gay men are still listened to more than women. I think it's very different as well, because for men, obviously they care about men and they want to convert them because men are important, whereas women, they're happy for you just to be psychologically damaged and just like perform. As long as women perform their role, no one really gives a f- what they are, because we're just women, right? What I find is, and other lesbians that I've talked to is, or queer people or non-binary people, is that most of the psychological damage for me was trying to de-gay myself more than anything. I mean, I knew gay men in the church who got, you know, quote unquote, de-gayed by ridiculous things like, oh, set them up on a date with this woman. Or I remember one time this guy, they took him to his house and got rid of all his gay clothes, whatever the f*** that.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
That means all the pink shirts are right out, you know. But for me, I tried to de-gay myself in any way I possibly could, and it just was just so psychologically damaging.
So sort of how many people in your church or your church community, and how do you get those kind of messages that you needed to de-gay, apart from subliminal? Like, I'm just interested in how you kind of attempted the de-gay process on your own. So
you get the message from church, don't you, that being gay is not right, because firstly, the Bible says that. Someone's like, we're going to stone gays. It's kind of a clear message.
Yeah.
But also, it's a very homophobic environment. I remember actually the preacher, the pastor, Kevin. I've got no problem saying their names, by the way, because I don't care if
I don't care.
Hear this, like.
As far as I'm concerned,
exactly. But I remember him telling this story about how he cast out this gay demon, and the gay demon came out and had like a gay voice. And even at the time, I was like, this is so offensive. It's the clearest message that you can ever have, that you cannot be gay and be a Christian. And I feel like nowadays, because, like, you know, they've tried to modernize and it's a bit less woke to, you know, they'll be like, oh no, we love the gays, we love them, they come to our church. You won't get any position of authority, we won't affirm that, but we will put up with your quote unquote same-sex attraction. It's just it's a clear message, because the gender roles are enforced. Heterosexuality is enforced, just the whole environment is geared against anything other than just like straight, cis, gender binary, classic heterosexual stuff, isn't it?
Compulsory heterosexuality,
And then obviously you've got that at home also. Everyone who you're allowed to interact with is controlled. Well, for me it was. I wasn't allowed to hang out with anyone outside the church, anyone outside. It was, you know, it was living in a cult, essentially. And your whole entire environment is controlled so that you're not allowed any outside influence. And, you know, it's spoken about negatively. You can just tell, you know, especially when you're a kid, you can tell when somebody's speaking about someone gay and slurs, and they just hate on them. Like, it's so overt.
I mean, there's so many other sins that can send you to the lake of fire, you know. Why this one, you know?
I mean, trying to de-gay myself was definitely one of the most psychologically damaging things I've done, but in a way it's the least pressing issue with the church. Being gay. But like, what about the humongous issue of there not being a God? And what about the problematic issue of the Bible, which is a, you know, slavery, rape, sanctioning, like, it's a horrible thing, not to mention all the abuse that goes on in the church, you know? And they're meant to have this moral high ground. That's what I find really offensive.
I just keep hearing that same kind of thing over and over, like when you were saying your friends outside of the church were way more supportive.
It
just keeps coming up over and over, and I'm, you know, sitting here thinking, hang on, even when it's not just those kind of really clear ethical issues, it's particularly for women, it's so male, like, it's, you know, all about the boy characters.
You have your sort of like tokenistic, you know, like this week's sermons about the Book of Esther, but there's nothing that's not misogynistic about religion, all religions. There's not one that's not completely misogynistic, and Christianity is the worst.
What do you think made you different? You've got siblings?
I do. I'm the youngest of four, and maybe in the past 4 or 5 years, my sister, who's next to me in age, who went through a lot, she was a drug addict for 12 years, and this was to do with the fact that when we were growing up, we were very much neglected because my mum just loved Jesus more than her children. Kind of, she went off that way. But when the problem was, when she came back, she came to the church for help. And now the help that the church did fucked her up even more, because guess what? They don't actually have the tools to deal with real world problems, you know?
What kind of help was she looking for when you say she came back?
Well, she needed to be rehab. And it obviously put her back in contact with my mother, who is a narcissist, and it's really problematic. She has deconstructed her faith in the past 2-3 years, and I'm really proud of her for that. But my other two siblings are just still in the church, but they're not in this type of church. They're much more like, you know, like, you know, middle class, easy ozy kind of, you know, normal Christianity, where you can basically still just be a normal person, but you go to church. It's not like the mad cultish one that my parents took us into, which was the one that I'm talking about.
What do you think made you different from that? I mean, you've quite clearly abandoned the whole concept of you're not going to any church.
No, not at all. No. So, and I think you must hear this a lot as well from people, especially if you're born into it. It takes a long time to deconstruct it. You don't just flip a switch. It takes a long, long time because it's so ingrained. But I do wonder what, I mean, obviously the fact that I was gay and I'm not asexual. I wanted to be sexually active. That was something that was really rubbed up against Christianity, obviously. But I'm really not sure what it is. Yeah, like sometimes I look at my siblings, like my eldest sister, for example. Mm. She's one of the most intelligent people I've met in my life. She's so clever, so rational. Yeah. But then she thinks the world is 6,000 years old and believes this. And sometimes I'm just like, how the cognitive dissonance that people partake in. I think when you are raised to practice a level of gullibility that it requires for you to believe in nonsense, it becomes second nature. And I see that in people, and I had to actively deconstruct it myself. I had to deconstruct my homophobia. I had to, you know, it takes so much time to completely deconstruct it. And I'm sure you'll have spoken to people before that you feel like you've lost 10 years of your life.
20, 40, some people.
Yeah, because you're hidden from information, you're from life experience. Evolution,
yeah.
And not only that, not only are you hidden from information, you're also given a whole bunch of false information. So it's so difficult to deconstruct it. And when people, you know, look at cults and they're like, oh, I don't know how you could possibly get into that, it's like humans are very malleable, like, and we're pattern seeking creatures. And also when you're in a group, you know, like I was saying earlier, that pressure to like go to the altar call and speak in tongues and be an extrovert, and you just do eventually have to comply. You know, if everyone else has fallen over and shaken and pretending like they've got healed, then eventually you convince yourself that that's what's happening too. And it's easily done, but I think it puts you in a position where you're very susceptible to cognitive dissonance.
I strongly believe that people get very frustrated trying to convince somebody that, you know, look at this, look at what they've done here, or look at what they've done there. And it seems to often be a lot like family, where someone can criticize their own family, but if anyone else takes a shot at them, they'll get very defensive. Mm. And I've thought that's because the whole thing's so emotional. It's so emotionally based, you know. Oh, especially even a conversion experience can be so seeped in emotion that you can't then rationalize or argue intellectually with someone.
I mean, that's a really good point. And I think,
but it didn't work for you. I mean, you know,
I think that's the nail on the head, and in a way. And look at Hillsong. I mean, have you ever seen anything that's more emotionally manipulative in your entire life? Like, as a huge construct that basically is entirely based on an emotional manipulation and spiritual manipulation. But when you get people, you know, in that crowd mentality, and that's why I think so many churches want to be Hillsong, you know, and have Darlene Sheck songs and everything, because it appeals to people's emotion. And if you can appeal to their emotion, you can fuck with their head if you're not careful, you know.
Yeah, well, and you know, especially if you are careful to do that.
Yeah, and I think they know exactly what they're doing.
Absolutely, that music is weaponized and used.
I remember even in church them talking about it like this. They used to say, we have music because it appeals to the soul, and through the soul we can get to spirit. And it is about, like, they know. I remember them teaching us, like, how to prophesy, how to, and it's just like, it's basically teaching people how to be a spiritual medium. It's the same bullshit. Really interesting how they almost, and I don't know whether this is because my pastors were just uneducated and just didn't know how overt they were, just being like, so here's how to emotionally manipulate people, you know, and pray over them. And if you can't think of a prophetic word, just look around and find an object and be like, a spoon, you know, and then frame it as in like, oh, well, the Lord is just like, you know, there's a spoonful of blessings coming, but just you wait, it's going to be a tidal wave of blessings. Like, we've all heard this before, and anyone can do it.
I didn't know that. Tell me more. I didn't know these little magicians.
This is how you do it. You can fake a prophecy by just finding an object in the room and making up some about it.
Wow.
I sometimes wish I could go into a church and just pretend that I was one of them, because I can still speak in tongues. I know exactly everything to do. Complete performance. I always used to find it really ironic that speaking in tongues was this, you know, you had to get prayed for and you had to get anointed and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, how come I am a being atheist and I can speak in tongues now? What's that about?
tell I still want to know a bit more about what it was like, the Australian impact, that in terms of how it impacted the culture of the religion. I'm thinking, I just wonder.
Anzac biscuits? No.
Yeah.
Free Lamingtons every day at church. I think it was very, I'm not sure if what would be an Australian aspect or not, but it was just, I mean, obviously a lot of the visiting preachers were from Australia because we had that connection to Australia. Okay. So for us, it was more, we were sold the utopia was Hillsong. The utopia was a mega church where the music was just incredible. And, you know, you were rich, you know, i.e. blessed. And I think it was more to do with power. Like the preacher, the pastors really wanted to be Hillsong because they looked at like Brian Houston and Bobby Houston and thought, oh, they get up on stage and look, everyone loves them. And they just, they must be so anointed to have a church that big. And it's more about power and influence. And it probably creeps into the whole Americanized, like, you know, Christian nationalist thing of like thinking like what Hillsong does, like we should run the whole country, we should run the music awards, we should run this, that and the other, and just basically be a big bumbling, you know, leader, because it's just, you know, they want power and ego and control. And
what do you think it is about your culture that something like that kind of a church would appeal to people? Because again, stereotypes, but you know, I thought just sort of realistic, down-to-earth kind of people, the Scots. And
that is a good question, because as well, and the thing is, in comparison to America, people see the entirety of Europe as a very secular place, and it is in comparison to America, but Scotland has quite a history of missionaries and like Pentecostal revivals. It's so much smaller, but I honestly think that this stuff is going on in every country. It's just some some countries like America really, they let it seep into, you know, from church to state. But it's going on, you know, it's something that I, even with my peers, they don't understand that gay conversion therapy is going on right under their nose, even in a city like Glasgow, which is a very progressive city. It's very queer. It's very, you know, yeah, it's a good city. It's a good country to live in if you're, you know, a minority.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, it's still going on, like, right round the corner. I think it's just more hidden because people know that it's extremely cringe. Because we're more, sarcastic's not the word, kind of, we are quite down to earth.
Yeah.
I think we find enthusiasm like Pentecostal church really embarrassing. So that's probably why it gets hidden more. But it's happening. Cringe people are everywhere.
I mean, was it happening just in your church as well? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I mean, you weren't forced into it.
No, we didn't have like gay conversion camp or anything like that. It's like the policy was, you wouldn't stand up and be like, hey, let's go to gay conversion camp. But if someone in church said, I'm struggling with same-sex attraction, they would 100% have resources, or just make up resources. They'd make up ways to de-gay you.
Okay.
Ways that firstly don't work at all, because you can't actually de-gay someone, but that would just end up being psychologically damaging for them. So my way was to never actually properly admit it and just get married instead, to pretend I was heterosexual, but that did not work out.
Now there's loads more to Sarah's story, and like this one, there'll be two versions coming out over the next couple of days. I hope you enjoyed part one. And before I say keep leaving Hillsong again, I thought I might add that when I say it, I mean financially, psychologically, physically. It's such a huge process, socially, all kinds of ways. If you can do little things to unlearn and to keep leaving, you're doing good. It takes a really long time. We've got loads of ways and strategies and ideas coming up in different content. So, keep leaving Hillsong and join us for part two of An Insignificant Gay Kid. Keep being kind to yourselves, kind to each other, and we'll talk then. Bye. Oh,
deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.